Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. It's an honor to welcome Colonel Tracy Mack. Tracy's retired Air Force officer and Air Force Academy grad and is active in a group, STARS, that is very concerned about the focus of our service academies on critical race theory, the proper use of pronouns at the cost of focusing on being combat ready. And I totally share her concerns. Tracy, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Honored to be here. I've listened to your show whenever I'm in the car on Sunday afternoon around here, and I really enjoy it. So it's an honor to be here.
Hey, we're teammates. Let's start with your time in uniform. When and why did you decide to go to the Air Force Academy? And what did you do when you graduated?
Okay. Well, initially, I wanted to be an astronaut. And after reading the book, Right Stuff, and looking into it, it appeared that being an Air Force officer and pilot was probably the best way to head in that direction. So I got accepted at the Air Force Academy, but quickly found out that I didn't really like flying. And
oops.
I didn't feel so good in physics. So I switched over to political science, international affairs, with a national security emphasis, and ended up going into the security forces career field.
And as an Army guy, I would have called that the military police. Am I right?
Correct. We're very similar. We do law enforcement, resource protection, and after 9/11, the part of our job called anti-terrorism became very important. That's the defensive side of combating terrorism. And then in the combat zones, we do base defense, convoy security, that type of thing. So
okay.
Very much like military police.
What were some of your favorite assignments?
Oh, I loved it in Germany, but I really liked my deployments. I deployed twice at the turn of the century as the Joint Task Force Provost Marshal for two humanitarian relief operations. One was Shining Hope, which was the humanitarian side of the Kosovo operations. The other one was Atlas Response, which was flood relief in southern Africa. And then I did deploy a couple of times to Afghanistan, once to Iraq, and once to Djibouti. Of those, Djibouti was definitely my favorite just because I was way outside my comfort zone and got to work with some special ops people down there. But the thing that really changed my career path was the second time I went to Afghanistan, I commanded the provincial reconstruction team, Gardez. And we were responsible for reconstruction and development in Paktia and Logar provinces. So it was what the Army would consider a civil affairs mission, and that was pretty awesome. I liked being on the side of helping people. And after I did that for a year, then I went back and forth between security forces and stability ops at both Central Command Headquarters and the Pentagon. So it kind of became a secondary career field, if you will, for me, even though the Air Force doesn't have a civil affairs career field, but once you get the experience, then people start pulling you back into it.
And your final assignment was at the Pentagon, wasn't it?
It was. It was technically at the security forces headquarters there, but I branched out again and worked with the Office of the Secretary of Defense, Under Secretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, and coordinated and actually worked in the building of the State Department for a while. We were training interagency teams to go back to Afghanistan for the reconstruction mission.
Okay. And after you retired, you volunteered for, is that the right word for, the Air Force Academy and recruiting? Do I remember that right?
Yes. What it is it's called the Admissions Liaison Officer, and they have them all over the country and at U.S. bases around the world. And we're volunteers. Now, if you're a reservist, you can do it to get reserve points, but retirees, you just volunteer. And so I had at one point 46 schools in my local area here, and I would go do presentations and work with any of the students who were trying to apply for the Air Force Academy.
Okay. Now, let's get to our topic. You are an active member of STARS. STARS stands for Stand Together Against Racism and Radicalism in the Services. I said that right, didn't I?
Yes, you did. You got it.
Okay. What's STARS mission and what's your role in STARS?
Okay. Well, what we do is we seek to expose and educate both the military, the public, government officials about the Marxist agenda that is infiltrating the military and, well, all over the U.S. for that matter. But anyway, in the form of critical race theory, and it's implemented through the diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. And all those words often sound very good, but when you dig into the way that they are being defined and the policies stemming from them, they're actually Marxist. Now, we started focusing at the U.S. Air Force Academy, USAFA, but we often end up expanding to other academies and the DOD in general. And what we want to do is reverse course, basically, and advocate. So we turn to a meritocracy, an apolitical meritocracy for the military, where you get ahead based on your hard work, efforts, talents, you know, your merit. We also look to promote unity and not divisions. And the DEI is right now, from what we're getting from cadets and other people in the military, is it's actually causing divisions based on identity and politics. So it's not unifying, it's divisive. And we need to go back to unity if we're going to be an effective military.
Yes, ma'am. I have often said the only purpose to have a military is to kill people and break things. And if you're really good at it, nobody wants to mess with you. That's called deterrence. And
yes,
that's the purpose of the military. And you can't have an effective military force if you aren't judging and honoring and promoting people based on ability. And that's what we need to get back to, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, right now, even minority cadets that we talk to don't like this because they feel that they don't know if they got to the academy or if they got jobs, specific jobs in leadership at the academy based on their merit, or did they get them because of some identity?
That makes sense.
Yeah, and they don't like that. They want to know that I deserve to do what I'm doing.
You know, everybody, at least everybody that we want in the military, wants to be judged by their ability, and they want to continually get better, and they want to be recognized for what they have done right. They don't want to be babied along, because how can you be a successful military, put other people's lives at risk in any other way? I certainly understand that. It makes sense to me. It probably does to you too, right?
Absolutely. And when you think about it, when we're recruiting for the academies, we're looking at the top 10% of the kids around the country. So you're not talking about somebody who's been struggling along. You're already talking to somebody who's had all sorts of accomplishments in their lives. They have to have had at least a 3.8 GPA to be considered in high school. You know, so these are not the type of kids that want to be or even need to be pandered to.
Yes. And those are, of course, the kind of people we want leading our nation and our troops in combat. There's more to discuss about racism and radicalism in our military, and Tracy's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines Freedom. Yep, troops, it's time for push-ups. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, twice a week usually. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Tracy and I will be right back. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Air Force Colonel Tracy Meck about radicalism and racism in our military, especially in our service academies, but everywhere. Tracy, you talked about the fact that the minority cadets you've talked to don't like it, but there've got to be some people that are buying this stuff and are going to take it into our military, right?
Absolutely. I don't know what the percentage is, who buys it and who doesn't, but some of the comments that we've gotten are quite concerning. Like one cadet says, there's real division in the cadet wing on account of the political commissar type position. What he's talking about there is each squadron has a cadet officer, an NCO for DEI, and their job is to educate and mentor the rest of the cadets on DEI type issues, which sounds a whole lot to us like the Soviet political commissars. So that's where that one came from. One of the parents told us, in an attempt to make one or two feel inclusive, they upset the much larger percentage of Christians and deeply religious people who are not buying what they're selling. And then another cadet says, a lot of people think that it's wrong, but they're too scared to speak up about it. So you can't tell for sure how many are buying into it and how many are just putting up with it because they want to be an officer.
Well, one of the things about our military is the people at the top decide, and it's our job to do what they tell us. But there has to be a line drawn somewhere. The Gestapo in Germany in World War II, when they were ordered to kill all the Jews, said, well, I was just obeying orders. No. That didn't accept that in the trials after the war, and it shouldn't stand now. There comes a point where you're supposed to stand up for your values and the values of our nation. Am I missing something here?
Nope, that's the way it is. And some of the cadets will speak up. But, you know, there's been people that have spoke up in those services in general, like Lieutenant Colonel Matt Lohmeyer, for instance.
Yes.
And he tried to bring the information to his superiors and show them how it connected the critical theories of Marxism. And they ignored him. He even did an IG complaint and they dismissed it. You know, he tried to use the chain of command. So then he went out and wrote a book. And of course, he was asked to leave. So he left. He had to get out of the military just shy of retirement. But that's what happens when you speak up.
And we have to stop that somehow. And that's quite a challenge, isn't it? What do we do? I guess the only thing we can do is encourage our elected officials, Congress, House, Senate, to demand getting rid of this junk and not funding the military if they keep it up. I mean, that's one thing we could do, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And a matter of fact, STARS, one of our big things that we do to fight this is to work with people in Congress to educate them on what's going on and make our recommendations. And we've been kind of successful in that. We did have some concerns about the vaccine mandates in pushing an emergency use authorized drug onto people in the tyrannical way that people who were opposed to that were being treated. And we did highlight all of this and send information to Congress. And we believe we had some impact on the mandate being ended in the NDAA last year. And we'll continue to tell Congress about what's going on at the academies. And hopefully some of the NDAA wordage this year will be a result of that. Now, we're doing really good with the one in the House, but of course the Senate NDAA doesn't agree with what the House says, so we'll see what comes of it when they get back in session in September.
You know, your point's well made about the COVID stuff. By now, there's enough medical evidence to make it clear that, one, it was never a totally approved thing that could be forced on people. And two, an awful lot of people have had serious health situations because of it, yet nobody's accepting saying, oops, we goofed here, and let's back off, and let's not stop throwing people out. That must have been
quite
a word of fight.
They have stopped throwing people out. They have stopped throwing people out, but we still have a long way to go to reinstate the ones that are there still in to the regular career progression, or to to get the other ones back in. Now, they're saying that the people that were discharged can apply to come back through the normal reenlistment processes, but there's nothing to compensate for the lost training, the lost promotions, the adverse impact on their careers, not being allowed to deploy, so not getting that in your records, which is often important for promotion. And then there's 54% of the discharges were given a general discharge under honorable condition, which, if I'm not mistaken, makes them ineligible for veterans' benefits. And then the other biggest problem was a bunch of the people that were kicked out were, you know, 17, 18, 19 years in, had deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq, how many, who knows how many times, and they were discharged without any retirement benefits after being deployed to combat zones probably numerous times.
That's just obscene. And the challenge is that if these kinds of things that you just got through describing are going on, who knows how many other things are going on that we haven't found out about yet? Because the mindset that will do this, whether it's the critical race theory or the COVID stuff, it isn't stopping there. It's not a one-stop or two-stop thing. This is an attitude that needs to be dealt with, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. We're not looking out after our troops anymore. It's all about ideology. Readiness and mission effectiveness doesn't seem to be as important as adherence to the latest social ideology trends.
And that is so contrary to the reason, to the purpose of having a military. I mean, this is at a time when we have more military challenges, Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, than you could shake a stick at. And we're making our military less effective. And we're trying to push that decrease in effectiveness into the future. Holy cow, we got to get active. And I'm guessing STARS is one of the few ways you can do something. Talk to us about that. What can people do if they contact STARS, or what can that do?
Well, they can go to our website at STARS with two R's .us and explore. We've got an extensive collection of information on CRT, the DEI, the vaccine mandates. I mean, you can read there for hours. And educate yourself, and then go out in your community and see if this stuff is going on, and be empowered with this knowledge to fight it on the local level. You can also sign up for a weekly headlines document that we send out just to highlight different articles that have been published within the last week. And we have a quarterly situational report script that comes out that can tell you what it is that STARS itself has been doing. Another thing you can do through the website is to donate. We don't have paid staff. We only have one person that's paid, and that's basically our IT person. Our whole entire leadership team and most of our workers, except her, are all volunteers. But we still need money to be online, to sponsor or go to events where we can make presentations and get our message out, and all that costs money. So we're more than happy to take donations. And the other thing is, you can volunteer. Like I said, we're a volunteer organization, and we could do a lot more if we had more people that were willing to dedicate some time to help us.
And to that, I say amen. This is our country. We're supposed to be good stewards of the country. We're supposed to take care of it. It's not supposed to take care of us. Tracy, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your insights and for sharing. Thank you for your service in uniform. Thank you for what you're doing in STARS now. Our country needs you and the STARS team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and you have a wonderful day.
We're off to a great start.